And good evening and welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. It's my pleasure and privilege to be with you for the next hour, and we have a great guest in this hour. Before we go to Dr. Mahoney, just a reminder that our shrine to the Venerable Matt Talbot is open in St. Gabriel's Church in the Grace Ferry neighborhood of South Philadelphia on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 9 to 5. And all are welcome to come down and join us. If you get in touch with Father McKay or I through the Our House Ministries website, we'd be more than happy to meet you over in church and give you a tour and a little introduction to Venerable Matt Talbot. So without any further ado, I am joined today by Dr. Daniel Mahoney. And Dr. Mahoney is a professor emeritus at Assumption University and senior fellow at the Claremont Institute. He was a senior writer at Law and Liberty. He's a specialist in French political philosophy, anti-totalitarian thought, especially with Solzhenitsyn, and the intersection of religion and politics. He's the author or editor of 12 books, including Alexander Solzhenitsyn, The Ascent from Ideology. Welcome to the show, Daniel. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, thank you very much. And I'm really glad to be with you.
Yeah, and the book we're talking about today is called Memoirs, written by Joseph Cardinal Mezenti. And Joseph Pierce has provided a foreword, one of my favorite authors, and you, Dr. Mahoney, have written the introduction to this. And just to get us started, in going through the introduction, you wrote in here, and you're quoting the Cardinal, "Both Nazism and Bolshevism insisted that they had to penetrate our country in order to replace a faulty past by a happy new world. The communists, in keeping with their doctrine, announced that the past had to be uncompromisingly liquidated." And I couldn't help but think about our own situation right here in the United States today. And so I'm looking forward to the conversation because this great cardinal was one that would stand up to the Nazis and the Russians, right?
Yes, absolutely. I would say the Soviets are communists. It wasn't the Russians per se, but it was communist ideology. But yes, Mezenti saw that there were powerful ideological currents at work in the modern world that wanted to reject and repudiate the whole heritage of Western and Christian civilization. And of course, the most extreme examples of that, of those ideological tendencies, you know, that culminated in the totalitarian repression of liberty and human dignity were the National Socialists and the Communists. But I think you're quite right that I think many of us are in a sort of semi-permanent state of shock to see the same kind of currents, you know, a different form, but the same demand that we reject our spiritual and civic inheritance, that we throw out the achievement of Western civilization, that we somehow start over, you know, on radically secular and anti-human grounds. So I think it's always a terrible mistake to treat the tragedies of the 20th century, you know, this systematic assault on the human soul that we saw with the totalitarian regimes and ideologies is just a thing of the past. And I think we've done a really bad job of passing on those lessons to young people. Mm. You know, I think one reason why there's so many young people, I can testify this 36 years as a college professor, who seem to think communism is a good thing, or at least not such a bad thing, is because we haven't conveyed that experience to them, let them know exactly what was at stake on this war on liberty and the human spirit. So, there's an awful lot. And Mezenti, we'll get into detail, of course, but he was, I think, one of the great embodiments of heroic Christian virtue in the 20th century, you know, dealing with these implacable enemies of human freedom and human dignity. And we need more of that courage and heroic Christian virtue today.
That was my thought exactly. In reading through some of this, that it almost seemed as if he was seeking martyrdom, and he certainly suffered a white martyrdom. He would not be killed or executed by either the Nazis or the Soviets, but you know, would spend some time in prison. And I was just thinking that you know, a copy of this book should probably go to every, you know, bishop and cardinal around the world to see what this heroic virtue looks like, especially in these days. I know that there's a number of good bishops that have voiced concerns and have been outspoken about some of the things going on in the current political and cultural climate, but an awful lot of them just seem to remain silent. So who was Cardinal Mezzenti? With maybe a brief...
Well, Cardinal Mezzenti was a Hungarian Catholic. Hungary, if you look at a map of Europe, is dead center in the center of Europe. People may have heard of or remember the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the dual monarchy, Austria-Hungary. Mezzenti was born in 1892. He died in 1975. He was of peasant stock. You know, the Catholic Church was very good at locating talent and hard work and spiritual integrity. And but the young Mezzenti benefited from a Catholic education, became priest, eventually a bishop. And he became a bishop at a very momentous time in Hungarian and European history. I should backtrack a little bit. As a young parish priest in 1919, Hungary had a Bolshevik or communist revolution, a lot like the Soviets, but it failed after 3 or 4 months. There was a counter-revolution. Mezzenti was first arrested by the communists in 1919. For standing up to their totalitarian ideology and preaching against the new dictatorship. In the 1930s, as a still as a priest in Western Hungary, he spoke out very vehemently and courageously against the emerging Hungarian Nazi movement, the Arrow Cross. He became bishop at the end of the war. And it's interesting, he was born Joseph Pehm, a P-E-H-M. They were called Schwabians. They were German-Hungarians. He knew the German language as well as Hungarian language. But in the middle of the war, he renamed himself Mezzenti after his native village of Mezzent because he wanted to express solidarity with Hungarian traditions, especially given what the German National Socialists were doing. And in 1944, as Bishop of Veszprém, like a lot of almost all the Hungarian bishops, they spoke out against the deportations of the Jews that the Nazis had forced on the Hungarian government. And when Hungary began resisting that with the encouragement of the bishops, there was a coup, and the Arrow Cross, which is the name for the Hungarian Nazis, they seized control and carried out these really vicious deportations. Budapest had something like 800,000 Jews, or the greater area, and hundreds of thousands were deported to death camps like Auschwitz. The bishops did what they could, but Mezzenti was arrested a second time by the Hungarian Nazis. And then after the war, the Red Army, the Soviet Army, came into Hungary. At first, there were free elections, and the anti-communists won, but by using what the Hungarian communist leader, Matthias Rakosi, called salami tactics, sort of breaking each opposition party up and arresting figures here and here and closing the media and all of this. By 1947, the Democratic parties were all crushed. So it was really Mezzenti. He was the spiritual leader of the nation. He was the primate of Hungary, the Archbishop of Esztergom, Budapest. And he declared a Marianeer. He went all around the country rallying people for Mass, praying to Jesus via the Virgin Mary, you know, praying for the integrity of the nation, its freedom, its spiritual traditions. And he was arrested on the 26th of December, 1948, St. Stephen's Day, the day after Christmas. He underwent a terrible show trial. He was tortured, beaten, sleep-deprived, drugged, And if you see pictures, you can see them in the memoir. His eyes look funny. He was forced to sign, these fantastic claim that he had committed these fantastic crimes. And, by the early 50s, mid-50s, he'd lost about half his weight in a communist prison. But eventually they started feeding him again. He was freed during the Hungarian uprising, the Hungarian Revolution of 56, when the entire nation rose up against the communists. He spoke to the nation with great dignity. He was only free for 4 days because the Soviet army came into Budapest, overthrew the new anti-communist government, and Mindszenty took refuge in the American legation, later embassy. He was there for 15 years. He had refused to compromise with the communist dictatorship. Eventually, he came to the West, and for 4 years, 71 to 75, he ministered to Hungarians all around the world, because many people had fled Hungary at the time of the revolution in 56. And Mindszenty came to the United States quite a few times, because there was he went to New Jersey and Ohio and California and Texas, and he went to South America, Australia, South Africa, West Europe, England, wherever he could minister. And he spoke up. He warned the church at the time not to accommodate itself to Marxism, not to think it could reach a permanent accommodation with communist regimes by compromising on matters of principle. And sadly, Pope Paul VI removed him as Archbishop of Esztergom in 1974, on the 25th anniversary of his show trial, and he lifted the excommunication against all the communist officials who had tortured him and arrested him. So it was not the finest moment. The church, really, that policy would go on until John Paul II became Pope in 1978. Karol Wojtyła, the Archbishop of Krakow, was a great admirer of Mindszenty, and I have a beautiful picture of him praying at Mindszenty's tomb in 1988. So Mindszenty died in 1975, but he managed to publish his memoirs, which I think had a big impact on people in Western Europe, in the United States. Unfortunately, the book went out of print, but on February 2nd, 2019, Cardinal Mindszenty was made venerable, the first stage on the way to sainthood, for his heroic Christian virtue. And at that time, I began, I made it a mission to remind people who Mindszenty was, wrote a piece for Catholic Thing, a longer piece in the Hungarian Review, an English language journal on Mindszenty. And then I approached Ignatius Press, and Mark Brumley and Father Fessio, who had both loved the book, Joseph Pierce, who also loved the book. We all collaborated and made this edition possible, and it was officially released on March 5th. So that's the story.
Very good. Our guest today, in case you joined us late, is Dr. Daniel Mahoney, and we're talking about the book Memoirs, written by Joseph Cardinal Mindszenty and published by Ignatius Press, available at ignatius.com here locally in the Philadelphia area. You can pick it up at the St. Jude shop, and if they don't have it in stock, I'm sure that they get regular orders from Ignatius every day, so they can get it for you in short order. The parallels between what Mindszenty was facing, and we're nowhere near that here in the West, I don't think. But there's some parallels there, and especially when he talked about how we need to look at the past, and I think we see a lot of our prelates today that are they're just not vocal, Dr. Mahoney. And what gave Cardinal Mindszenty the charisma or the courage to do to be outspoken the way he was?
I think it was first of all, he had a character. He had character. He had a sense of mission and purpose, deep fidelity to truth, deep fidelity to the Catholic faith. And he was also a Hungarian patriot. And he came from a generation where being, modern Hungary was really established by King St. Stephen, you know, who converted the nation to Christianity in the year 1000. And Hungary had always been a deeply Christian nation. And so the national story and the Christian heritage were went hand in hand. And so I think Mazzini resisted these evil and awful totalitarian ideologies and tried to defend the liberty of the church and the liberty of his people, both in the name of the Christian faith and of Hungarian patriotism. And he was a good European. He was shaped by, you know, an older European Christian inheritance, which is, you know, fraying, which is not as strong as it used to be either in Europe or in the United States. You mentioned we're not in as bad shape as the kinds of things that Mazzini faced, and that I think is true. But with, you know, the woke on college campuses, the forbidding of free discussion, I just wrote a piece about a Chinese Christian, Zi Van Fleet, who was supposed to speak at a Christian college in Spokane, Washington. She had lived through the terrible Cultural Revolution in China with the millions of people repressed and killed and the assault on traditional culture. And she'd written widely about parallels between what's going on, you know, in some cultural institutions and in college campuses and what happened in the Communist Cultural Revolution in China. And the student government association at this Whitworth College, a Protestant college, voted 9-4 not to allow her on campus because the way she pointed out parallels between, you know, the censorship carried out by the woke and the Cultural Revolution was would hurt people's feelings, you know. And so here, you know, somebody who experienced communists firsthand, who saw the sufferings of her own people, the assault on culture, the war on religion, is banned from a Christian college by student activists. It's just unbelievable. So we have to, you know, things can get bad very quickly if we don't learn lessons from the past and don't take sustenance from the examples of people like Cardinal Mazzini. I should mention George Cardinal Pell, who recently died, the Archbishop of Sydney, Australia, who was railroaded, you know, and accused of sexual abuse he never committed and was eventually vindicated by the Australian courts. But he wrote a beautiful blurb. The last thing he wrote for the memoirs, and I'll just read it. It's very brief. The memoirs of Cardinal Mazzini are enthralling, evidence of a terrible time to be set with Solzhenitsyn's tales of the gulag. The cardinal was a hero for me as a teenager. He still is. So I think of Cardinal Pell undergoing what he had to go when he was assaulted by these anti-Catholic media elements in Australia and, you know, actually imprisoned for, you know, in a terrible injustice. But Mazzini was an inspiration for him, you know, somebody who showed him what true Christian courage and fortitude required in these times.
Yeah, and you, I guess when I say it's not that, it doesn't seem to be as bad as it was, but you rightly point out, and I don't know how quickly it flipped in Hungary during Mazzini's time, but, you know, I don't know if it's an overnight thing. I think in the case of the Nazism and the Night of the Long Knives, and it's almost like somebody flipped a switch, and all of a sudden we went from this woke culture, if you will, where we get all these people that feel like they've been treated unjustly in the name of social justice, that we're going to put these things into place to make everything just. And then at some point, right, there's it just seems to be like a switch flips, and all of a sudden it's like, well, wait a minute, this isn't where we thought this was going. And I have a couple of 20-somethings myself that recently graduated from college, and I don't think they're full-blown woke, but they definitely have the woke influence. And
I call it woke adjacent. It's where you get corrupted by this overweening atmosphere, the same slogans, the same distortions, the same misemphasis. You know, our country can do no good, our church can do no good, everything in the past is unjust, and you end up getting almost a wholly distorted account of the past, because you're judging everything by these utopian standards that justify, you know, throwing away everything that has been passed on to us. And, you know, it's a spirit of ingratitude, a refusal to acknowledge, you know, we have many, even the principles we appeal to impose injustice are principles that have been passed on by our civic heritage, our religious heritage. If we throw those out, we have no standards to appeal to defend justice or liberty or civilization. So it's, I'm hoping that most Americans have enough good sense to step back from the precipice. But, you know, what you mentioned about your own kids, who I'm sure had a very good upbringing, religious and civic and otherwise, it's very hard to know what to do, because, you know, whether it's elementary school or high school or college, this attitude of enmity toward the tradition is so widespread that, you know, I think we can win this battle if we can do something about education. But education is at every level, really, from kindergarten to graduate school, is largely, not exclusively, but largely dominated by those elements that, you know, want to repudiate our culture and civilization. And, you know, I mentioned before, I have students who, you know, they think communism's not so bad. You know, they don't know. I had a student who said to me a couple of years ago, I didn't know the communists persecuted Christians. Well, how did a 22-year-old not know that? Why were they hearing that for the first time in my classroom?
Yeah, it's bizarre to me. That's happened, and the people that are perpetrating this, if you will, have been very good at it. They've slowly over time infiltrated the various institutions. The fact that we have to actually have parents that attend school board meetings and, you know, and they're called domestic terrorists because all they want to say in their child's education is beyond bizarre to me, and yet there's a whole lot of people that support them. And you only have to spend 8 minutes on Twitter or some of these other social media platforms to see how vehement people are when it comes to attacking anybody that wants to speak out about what our kids are being taught.
And I can say this, I don't, you know, even the communists didn't imagine anything as metaphysically mad as transgenderism and gender theory. The idea that there are 173 genders and there's no connection between our, you know, our bodies and our souls, and that we can remake ourselves at will. I mean, this is really crazy stuff, and it's so widespread. It dominates the culture. Young people who, you know, growing up has its challenges, and they're very vulnerable to this kind of propaganda. I'll tell you, in Hungary, Cardinal Manzini fought very, very hard to protect the Catholic schools. And one of the things the communists did in 1948 or so is they closed all the Catholic schools and the universities, the high schools, the elementary schools. And that meant that the communists had a complete monopoly on education. And, of course, it's something much more extreme than we're facing, but nonetheless, it's really vital, as I think that example shows, to have institutions that, I mean, and I wish our Catholic schools did a better job. I mean, many Catholic schools promote the same stuff. Many Catholic colleges and universities are woke or show very little respect for, you know, Orthodox Christianity or the traditional teachings of the church. So, but still having pluralism, having, you know, I have some hope that classical schools, classical Christian schools, homeschooling, that these are all very important vehicles for keeping, old truths and traditions alive. And I would say a book like Vinzeni's, it's a beautifully written book. It's a story. And I think well-written accounts of what happened to people in the past, the moral witness of a man like Vinzeni who stood up to grave evil. I think these are the kinds of things that can capture people's imagination. You know, it's not like reading just a history book or reading an op-ed. It's like you're gripped by an account and you realize that human beings have been through terrible things in the past, and we have to, rise to the occasion and rise up to the challenge if we want to, preserve our civilization and preserve our human dignity.
Well said. We've reached the bottom of the hour, Doctor. So if it's all right with you, we're going to take a short break. Can you stay with us?
I certainly can.
Very good. I look forward to it. We're just going to take a short break for our listeners. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
To you, our faithful family of listeners, no words can express how much we appreciate your standing in the gap with us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. It is truly your amazing prayer power, your undaunting commitment that has enabled us to stay on the air, no doubt about it. Be assured of our daily prayers, not only for you, but for your families as well. We pray that God will continue to bless you as you bless us. To join us and become a ministry partner, visit our website at inhissign.com or give us a call at 610-527-2906.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. And I just want to add my thanks and praise to our listeners for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio, both your financial and prayerful support that's kept us on the air for over 40 and close to 50 years and allows us to bring you shows like today's, which it never fails to amaze me what we can learn in these hours. And our guest today is Dr. Daniel Mahoney, and we're talking about the book Memoirs by Joseph Cardinal Menzente. And Dr. Mahoney has written an introduction to this book. And as we're having this conversation, Doctor, the thing that keeps going through my mind is that those who do not learn history are doomed to repeat it. And it's almost like the woke culture, in trying to erase our past, it looks like we're headed to places where all these things have already been tried and failed. And, anybody that looks at the 20th century and the rise of communists, the millions of people that have died as a result, and yet somehow or other people are just able to block that out, want to forget about it, not talk about it. And I think, to your point, think that we can try it. Maybe, Stalin just didn't do it right, or Hitler just didn't do it right. If we do it right, that everybody's going to be happy. And nobody can ever point to an example where it actually worked. And I just, one other thing, one of the things I got out of the book in the beginning is that timeline. And the people that perpetrate the Nazism, Marxism, communism, they're very patient. They don't go after everything all at once. They get one sector of the economy, then another sector of the economy, and then they go after the Catholic schools. It's not like a complete invasion that happens overnight. It slowly happens over time.
And in Hungary, it took about 3 years. And as I said, the anti-communist parties won the elections, but it didn't matter because the communists were very, very determined to seize power, restrict freedom, and of course they had the Red Army, the Soviet Army there, that helped immensely. that limited the freedom of choice of the Hungarian people. But yeah, I mean, I think there's no inevitability in history. I mean, it was always nonsense when the Marxists claimed that, you know, the victory of communism was inevitable. That was kind of a confidence trick to make people, you know, become passive and feel like the victory of communism was preordained. But we have to get over this idea. We Christians have to get over this idea that this will all go away if we just wait and God will save us. You know, Thomas Aquinas, in his treatise on natural law, makes the point that human freedom, virtuous action, prudent judgment is part of God's providence. I mean, God operates through us, and not just through us, you know, but people who are enlivened and informed by God's grace. So we have to, if we're going to stop this stuff, we have to get over our passivity. We have to speak up. We have to be alert to what's going on. And we got to get over this tendency to just treat the past as the past. I mean, we had 100 years of humanity being brutalized by these inhuman ideologies. And, you know, I think back to the end of the Cold War, and a lot of people just missed the boat. They said, well, this was economics. You know, communism failed as an economic system. Well, that was part of it. But, you know, great people like Mindszenty, Solzhenitsyn, Pope John Paul II reminded us that communism was based on a lie about human nature. It was utopian. It ignored sin. It was atheistic. You know, when you don't have a realistic view of human nature, you think, oh, we'll give all power to a single party committed to social justice and all will be well. Well, men are not angels, and they abuse power very readily. And so in the name of socialism and social justice, you know, 100 million people perished in the 20th century. So people have to, you know, have to be alert to this. And I think there are currents in the church who confuse Christian wisdom with utopianism and, you know, a not very vigorous view of human nature and the realities of the world and a tendency. We saw it with liberation theology in the 80s and 90s, you know, to think one could accommodate Marxism and give it a human face. I will add one other thing that I think is very striking is when Mindszenty died in 1975, the Vatican was in the midst of a, what they called it, Ostpolitik, this policy of detente with Eastern Europe, and they accepted peace priests and sort of trying to accommodate these regimes. And people like Archbishop Wojtyła, Cardinal Wyszyński in Poland, Mindszenty said, this isn't the way. The communists only respect force, and we can't abandon our principles. So when John Paul II became pope in the fall of 1978, he followed a much more tough-minded and realistic policy. He knew that eventually these regimes would disappear. And I'm afraid now with China, we're sort of going back to those old illusions that we can make a deal and, you know, that, you know, not facing up to the nature of the regime. Of course, the church has to worry, and there have to be practical accommodations for believers under these terrible regimes, but there can't be fundamental compromise. And, you know, this is what Cardinal Zen from Hong Kong has been saying. You cannot accommodate communist regimes and ideology at the level of principle, you know. And you have a lot of Catholics in China who feel betrayed, you know, by, the Vatican agreeing to bishops who are really stooges of the Communist Party.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. When you look at the confusing messages that come out of the hierarchy of the church, and we, you know, we wonder who the heroes are going to be, who the Cardinal Mindszentys of the 21st century are going to be, who's going to be vocal and outspoken enough to lead us. And I think that those of us in the pews are looking for someone or something to help us get through whatever it is that's coming. And for some of us, if you're paying attention, it's pretty obvious where we may be headed. And yet we really don't have anybody out there outspoken other than maybe a handful of bishops here in the United States. I don't know about worldwide, that are willing to take a stand and say that we're headed to a pretty dark spot if things continue the way they are.
Well, I mean, there are Cardinal Sarah and Archbishop Mueller and others, Cardinal Mueller in Europe, I think Bishop Barron here. There are people who do speak up, but, you know, this Archbishop Paglia, who's the head of the Pontifical Academy for Life, 2 weeks ago, he stated in an interview that assisted suicide was perfectly compatible with Catholic doctrine. And three or four members of the Pontifical Academy for Life now are pro-abortion and pro-euthanasia. I mean, the Greek word skandalon, from which we get the word scandal, means stumbling block. I mean, this is a stumbling block for ordinary believers when you see prominent church leaders endorsing evil. I endorse your proposal that we that every bishop get a copy of Mazzetti's memoirs and learn what, you know, Christian courage and fortitude means. And I think if the church adopts the view that we just have to go along with the zeitgeist, with the spirit of the age, with, you know, capitulate to moral relativism in the ethical realms, in the realm of moral theology, sexual morality, what's going to happen to the Catholic Church is what's happening to the Church of England. It's just going to implode. And, you know, Jesus said the church, he'd always be with us, and the church, you know, will last until the end of time. But, you know, it could become a very small church if it loses its integrity. And it's I'm confident there are good Catholics out there crying out for principled leadership, and I just wish, you know, more bishops would act like apostles of Christ and not as bureaucrats. But, you know, even within the church, you know, there's human weakness and sin, we all know that, and we just gotta hope that from time to time there's some heroic fortitude. And, you know, come back to my theme, we've got I think of Manzani arrested three times and putting up very bravely with the opposition of the most implacable evils and ideologies, and yet he had that internal I think fortified by God's grace, but that sense that there was no doubt this is what he had to do, because otherwise he would have had to lie, he would have had to endorse ways of thinking about man, ways of thinking about, you know, political life that are just incompatible with justice, with natural law. And, I think we need to think about a lot of progressive Catholic circles now, there's sort of this mentality that we've got to give in, you know, we've got to abandon our teaching. Well, these are either truths that Christ taught us or they're not. But if they're truths Christ taught us, we don't have the option of throwing them out.
No, and in the long run, when you look at what we've been taught in the both scripture and tradition that's come down for 2,000 years, when you look at it, it all makes perfect sense. And to see what's going on today, and the confusing things that we're told, you know, whether it's coming out of the Vatican or individual bishops, lends to the confusion. And I made a mistake about a year ago. I had another guest on and actually said something very similar to you, because I wrongly said, you know, that we don't have to worry because we know in the end who wins. But to your point, we may win, but it's going to be a whole lot smaller group of people that wins than I think Christ intended, and that by sticking to our guns, for lack of a better phrase, but by staying with our faith, by continuing to pray and show up and talk in social circles about what, you know, what we believe, and not to be embarrassed by our faith or what the church teaches, that we can make a difference, and maybe,
you know, the last three popes have talked about the new evangelization, but I don't see much evangelization going on. I remember during the Amazonia Synod, the Catholic, but first of all, most of the native peoples in the Amazon are not Catholic. Majority of Christians in Brazil are not Catholic anymore. They're evangelicals. The Catholics don't convert anyone. And this bishop, he was a Venezuelan, I think he was bishop in the Amazon for 36 years. He said he's never converted anyone. He was just promoting environmental policies. You know, he wasn't interested, you know, go forth to all the nations and baptize in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And there's also this view, I mean, Mazzini had this, you know, stalwart faith that the fundamental truths of the faith are unchanging. You know, we have to apply them to our particular circumstances, but the truths themselves are non-negotiable. But you hear prominent theologians and even bishops saying, well, the Holy Spirit has revealed this to us, as if, you know, the apostolic inheritance, the moral law changes. It doesn't change. Mm. It can't change.
Amen.
You know, so this idea that the Holy Spirit is, you know, the spirit of what's happening now, it's, you know, this accommodation to the zeitgeist, and whatever that is, that's not Catholicism. So that's another thing I like about Mazzini. You read this book and you think, He was a deeply thoughtful man, learned, well-educated, but at the heart of it all was a simple faith, you know? And, you know, sort of the view that, you know, what gave him, that you asked me that at the beginning, the strength to stand up to, you know, what the scriptures call, you know, powers and principalities, you know, to great evil. And it was this stalwart confidence in the truths of scripture, the truths of the church, the truths of natural law. And, you know, sometimes we get so sophisticated, you know, we question away the basis of the faith. And, here was this, you know, courageous man, eloquent writer, but at heart he grew up in a peasant Catholic family where, you know, fidelity to Christ and Mary were, you know, the foundations of everyday life.
Very good. Again, we'd like to repeat the title of the book and where you can get it. It's Memoirs by Joseph Cardinal Mazzini. Our guest today is the gentleman that wrote the introduction to the book, Dr. Daniel Mahoney, published by Ignatius Press, so available at ignatius.com. Locally here in the Philadelphia area, look up our friends at the St. Jude Shop, and if they don't have it in stock, they can get it for you on very short order. You know, the other interesting aspect for me here, Doctor, is my wife's uncle, through marriage, came from Hungary, and I think around 1948 or 49, they escaped communism. And I haven't seen Uncle Tim probably in 2 years for health reasons, and we're actually going to have lunch with them a week from Saturday, and I'm going to bring the copy of the book with me. I'm sure he'll be
delighted. He'll remember it all. I'll tell you, I was just in Hungary for a month, a fellowship at a place called the Danube Institute, and I was giving a talk at a research institute, and there were a group of us sitting around talking, and it so happened I was at the table with a fellow who has edited, Mazzini's correspondence with the Holy See and with American presidents and Secretary of State, and with Cardinal Mazzini's elderly nephew. And I have to say it was so thrilling for me because, especially with the nephew, you know, their family, because they were related to Cardinal Mazzini, were, you know, it was hard to get jobs. They were fired. They were mistreated. And they remained 100% stalwart, you know, very proud of of what Manzoni represented, faithful to his message, and in time they were vindicated. To sit with this wonderfully sprightly old man who had lived in America for a while, and his father was Manzoni's brother, you know, and just to sort of accidentally come across him at this event in Budapest, it was, I think of all this because you mentioned your uncle, 1948-49, but you know, to meet some people who have those deep connections was very thrilling for me.
No, I'm certain. I'm certain of that, and that's what makes what you mentioned earlier about the college or university in Washington, where they wouldn't even let somebody, you know, speak who has real life experience with what it's like to live under communist rule. And, you know, that we've gone that far that even as students that you wouldn't voted to not allow her to speak, to get to the point where that's actually happening. And we've become so closed minded that we don't even want to hear what it is that may be headed our way if we continue on the path that we're on.
Well, one thing I've noticed that is worth thinking about. In my 36 years of teaching, when I first started teaching, the students were more divided between liberals and conservatives. But generally, except for a few radicals, almost everyone honored the idea that free speech and debate were important. And I have to say the left today doesn't honor that at all. If they disagree with you, you're a homophobe, you're a transphobe, you're a racist, you know, you defend an awful country, an awful church, and you should be silenced. There was recently an incident at Yale University. There was an editorial in the Yale Daily News. The Yale Daily News is a daily newspaper, at least 5 days a week, put out by students at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. And the editor was fulminating because Yale has a week where all the different clubs meet in, like, you know, the student hall, and they set up tables, and students can go around and find out what they do. Well, the pro-life group at Yale was up, and the editor was fulminating because she said they seemed like very good people, and they were having discussions with people, and they said, well, you know, we're happy to talk about these issues with you, but, you know, we have to think about, you know, the fetus as a person, not as a piece of matter and all that. And the woman had an editorial saying, these people are justifying the subjugation of women, trying to take out our rights. They should be thrown off of campus. She was angry that the pro-life students were polite and were making arguments about the dignity of human life. And for that, she wanted, in an editorial at Yale, wanted to throw them off campus.
Yeah, and I think we see that more and more, having been a debater in my high school days and, you know, having to oftentimes you would have to debate both sides of the same issue, depending on what round it was and you were on the affirmative or the negative. And to your point,
that was the great thing about debating societies and stuff, that it taught you those skills.
That's right. And, you know, you got to always look at you had to look at both sides of every issue. And it was from that I learned that you can always find somebody that said something that'll defend whatever position you're taking. And especially nowadays, it just seems like what gets fed to us and what comes out of people's mouths, this isn't even accurate. And yet it's the front page news and what dominates the news cycle sometimes. So,
you know, in the Platonic dialogues, Plato has Socrates. Socrates is always asking these probing questions of people, you know, to give a reason for why you believe this. And a lot of people couldn't. And, you know, they called him a gadfly because he would poke people and say, well, why is that? Or can you defend that position? Now, a lot, you know, the dominant view on campuses is if you ask a probing question, if you say to a student, well, how can you argue that? They'll say, well, that I have a safe space. Those questions challenge me. They make me feel bad. Therefore, you have to shut up. That's the destruction of liberal education. Liberal education is all about learning to give arguments for what you believe. By the way, the Epistle of Peter 1, the Apostle Peter says we must give reasons for what we believe. We have to be able to go out and say to people why we affirm our faith. That's why, you know, the Catholic religion has always emphasized the fact that faith and reason go hand in hand. And but we're living in a culture now where if you're 18 or 19 and you hold fanatical beliefs and somebody challenges you, you have the right to tell them to shut up because, you know, they want their safe space. They don't want to be challenged. Well, that's a subversion of education.
No, I see exactly what you're talking about. I think there are organizations out there. There's some Regina Academies here in the Philadelphia area that are trying to reform education and provide the true liberal arts education. There's a first conference, I think it's going on in California in a not-too-distant future, Adatus or something along those lines. But to bring back that true Catholic liberal and not liberal in the negative sense, education, where you do look at everything from both sides. And one of the things that I struggle with is we all know that there's a truth out there. You have philosophers that were always seeking the truth. And I wonder today, where are those people? Where are the ones that are actually seeking the truth?
Well, I'll tell you, with you know, when Jesus is being interrogated by Pilate says, "What is truth?" Well, as if, you know, truth doesn't matter. And, Pope Benedict XVI, you know, when he famously spoke about the dictatorship of relativism, what kind of what is intellectual inquiry or spiritual inquiry when you decide ahead of time there's no truth? You know, that's a dictatorship of relativism. And then it makes people indifferent. It dries up the soul. I mean, unless we have confidence in truth, I think everything else goes. So, I agree with you. I think there are some important initiatives in the Catholic world, for example, the classical Catholic schools. I just spoke last Friday at a Catholic high school in Lancaster, Massachusetts, called Trivium, and I have a wonderful curriculum and really serious, and I see these high school kids who are, you know, genuinely interested in learning and have a certain confidence in the faith. And I see that it can be done if we offer it to them, you know, but we're not offering it to enough young people.
Very good. One last time, the book we've been talking about this hour is called Memoirs by Joseph Cardinal Menzenti. And our guest today has been Dr. Daniel Mahoney, who wrote the introduction and provided a lot of insight, not just into Cardinal Menzenti and the book, but also to things going on currently here in the Western culture. You have just a couple minutes left. So anything we haven't gotten to that you wanted to mention before we let you go?
Yeah, one thing, I don't know how many of your listeners know the writings of Joseph Pierce, who wrote the foreword to the book, but Joseph has been a great Catholic apologist, and but it was interesting for me. He told me that he's a convert to Catholicism. He told me that reading Cardinal Menzenti's memoirs and he mentions this in his foreword to the book, played a role in his conversion to the faith. And to hear that, to see that this example, that that a stalwart Christian's testimony of confronting evil could itself be an argument for the truth of the faith. And I think that's very important. Another point I wanted to make is that Cardinal Menzenti was very concerned when he came to the West in 71. He spent 4 years in Western Europe, but traveled to the United States, Australia, etc. He was really alarmed by widespread abortion had become. Mm. And course, in the communist countries, abortion was extremely widespread. There were no limits whatsoever. But it was very interesting that, you know, he dies in 75. Remember, Roe versus Wade was 73. And he had great respect for the United States, you know, saw the United States as a defender of the cause of freedom. But he was very concerned that some people thought that people ought to have the freedom, you know, just to sweep away the unborn. So that's a sign that this spiritual or cultural struggle within our democracy has been going on for a long time. You know, a kind of corruption of the true understanding of human freedom. So we don't want to despair, though.
No.
One of my heroes is Winston Churchill, and he famously told the students at Eton, the English private school, in 1941, never despair.
You know? That's right.
As bad as things get, God gave us free will, and we have the ability and the capacity to speak up. But, you know, one of the cardinal virtues that Aristotle and Cicero and St. Thomas talk about is courage.
Amen.
And, you know, we Christians need to display courage, and this is a time that demands courage.
Yes, it does.
That, you know, of course, connects to Mindszenty's whole life. Right. You can read about it in the book that just a man who, from an early age, displayed courage. I don't know if
doctor,
he was looking for
doctor,
martyrdom,
excuse
but he
me.
Was willing to be martyred.
Hey, doctor.
Those are two different things, I think.
Excuse me,
you
doctor.
Know, to be willing to be martyred means you're going to do the right thing come what may.
Doctor, excuse me.
And I think that's what we're all called to do. Hopefully, you know, most of us are not going to confront martyrdom or imprisonment, but, you know, sometimes it costs a little bit with family members or neighbors or even kids, you know, when you defend the truth, you're going to annoy certain people. Yeah. But, you know, we're nonetheless obliged to do it.
Right. Doctor, we're running over. So I really appreciate you being here for the whole hour. I think it was very enlightening, and I can't thank you enough. For our listeners, we'll see you next Wednesday. Take care.